Hello and welcome to The Top Story, a podcast with headlines of the day from our correspondents around the world. I'm Tian Yu. Coming up in this edition, fighting continues to rage in the Gaza Strip as Muslims around the world are celebrating the holy month of Ramadan. The US military has airlifted its non-essential embassy personnel from Haiti and bolstered embassy security. And Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces have agreed to a temporary ceasefire during Ramadan. We begin with the Middle East. Muslims around the world are celebrating Ramadan, a holy month on the Islamic calendar. But few are in a celebratory mood as fighting continues to rage in Gaza with no truce in sight. Amid a dire humanitarian crisis in the enclave, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed to press ahead with an offensive in the southern city of Rafah. U.S. President Joe Biden has warned against the move, calling it a red line. David Biller reports from Jerusalem.
The eve of Ramadan, a month that typically is festive, you know, with decorations to the streets, fasting during the day, but big meals at night, you know, families getting together. This year, not happening. There are none of those decorations. I'm in East Jerusalem, the Arab side of the city. You don't see any of that. I was in a restaurant earlier, a fantastic little restaurant nearby, Sarwa Street Kitchen. The owner was receiving cancellations while I was there, including of big parties, one of 30 people. You know, it's just not a celebratory time right now. And people are, he says, people are saying they don't want to be having these big meals at a time when people in Gaza are literally starving to death. You know, we have at least 25 children who have died of dehydration or malnutrition since the war began, according to Gaza's health ministry. It clearly is not the Ramadan that you typically see here. We have seen, you know, promising steps toward establishing new aid corridors. This maritime aid corridor from Cyprus is in the works. World Central Kitchen is building a pier to receive the aid where it comes into Gaza. But we still, that would not be a replacement for the massive amount of aid that comes on truck convoys, or used to before the war began. We're at like half the level that it was before the war. Biden leveled some harsh criticism at Netanyahu. He said that going into Rafah would be a red line. This is something that Netanyahu has said he is going to do.
He's hurting Israel more than helping Israel by making the rest of the world. It's contrary to what Israel stands for. And I think it's a big mistake. So I want to see a ceasefire. There's red lines that if it crosses, and you cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead as a consequence of going after. There's other ways to deal, to deal with. With the trauma caused by Hamas.
Here in Israel, Lapid seized on this comment, saying that Biden and the U.S. government have lost faith in Netanyahu, as has half of his cabinet and the majority of Israeli people, and that really Netanyahu, you know, doesn't listen to the moderates in his cabinet. He always sides with the hardliners. Netanyahu shot back in a Politico interview. He said that his policies are overwhelmingly supported by the majority, and also that he this isn't like something that's just in his personal interest. This is something that will help Israel as a country. But as we see this sort of separation, at least in rhetoric, between the US and Netanyahu, it just sort of increases the uncertainty at a time when there already is significant uncertainty, you know, on the eve of Ramadan, when, you know, this is a month when tensions tend to run hot.
That was David Biller in Jerusalem. Turning to the Americas, the U.S. military has airlifted its non-essential embassy personnel from Haiti and bolstered embassy security. The Caribbean nation has been under a state of emergency after criminal groups unleashed havoc in recent days. Gangs now control much of capital Port-au-Prince and roads leading to the rest of the country. Their goal is to oust the prime minister. The unrest has seen over 360,000 Haitian people internally displaced, with over half of them children. Poppy Mpunti has more.
Violence in Haiti has escalated, prompting an evacuation of the U.S. embassy. Non-essential staff have been airlifted to safety. Turmoil has been ongoing in recent days and weeks as gangs have overrun the capital, Port-au-Prince. Led by leader Jimmy Chersier, known as Barbecue, who is demanding Prime Minister Ariel Henry step down. Violence has been escalating since two prison breaks and the escape of 3,800 prisoners, and local gangs joining forces to overthrow the government. Barbecue said if there isn't a handover of power, there will be a civil war that will lead to genocide. Henri came to power with U.S. support after the 2021 assassination of President Jovenel Moise. No elections were ever held. The prime minister is currently in Puerto Rico, where he's been since last month. Haiti is facing a humanitarian crisis, with schools and hospitals closed. 15,000 people have been displaced. Ports and the airport are on lockdown. The U.S. has not offered military support, providing only medical and communications resources. Caribbean leaders are expected to convene in Jamaica on Monday to discuss Haiti's ongoing crisis.
That was Poppy Mpunti on the situation in Haiti. In China, the annual session of China's top legislature, the National People's Congress, has concluded, drawing this year's two sessions to a close. Chairman Zhao Leji of the NPC Standing Committee delivered a speech urging continued adherence to people-centered approaches when conducting work.
We must follow the people-centered development approach and practice the whole process, people's democracy, respect people's will, their experience and their rights, and also utilize their innovation and mobilize the whole society in engaging in entrepreneurship and innovation, and mobilize our resources and strengths to march ahead.
At the closing meeting on Monday, national lawmakers approved the government work report and a revised organic law of the State Council. They passed the plans for economic and social development and the central and local budgets for 2024. The lawmakers also approved the work reports of the NPC Standing Committee, the Supreme People's Court, and the Supreme People's Procuratorate. This year's two sessions meeting have also set an ambitious agenda for the world's second largest economy in the year ahead. Dai Kaiyi shares some highlights of the NPC session.
One key focus in the government work report this year is the emphasis on developing the new quality productive forces. And over the past few days, we've spoken to numerous deputies and members in the Great Hall of the People, as well as in the hotels that they've been staying this past week. And I get the sense that this term actually means differently to deputies and members from different fields of expertise in different areas. For some, it certainly means leveraging traditional manufacturing through the means of technology and innovation. And for others, it means more about nurturing talents on future-oriented industries, including quantum technology and artificial intelligence. So here are what some of the deputies and members have to say on that front. Let's take a listen.
There are a large number of high-quality industries among China's traditional manufacturing industries. The effective coordination between the development of emerging industries and the transformation and upgrading of traditional industries is hoped to be further promoted by relevant departments so that enterprises can be encouraged to continue renovation.
Scientific researchers should be given a more relaxed environment. Potential failures should be allowed so they can choose more feasible and innovative paths without fearing failures. In this way, they can stimulate more original and innovative ideas.
I think we can be more bold when it comes to reform of the innovation talent evaluation system. Take the engineering staff, for example. The selection of our personnel should be decided on their work experience on major projects instead of paperwork.
So in one way or another, deputies are building their action plans around that concept, and that also speaks to how that efficiency came along in China. Once we figure out the direction, we hit the ground running. And that also explains how China accomplished that process of industrialization in just a few decades, something that took many of the Western counterparts almost 100 years.
That was Dai Kaiyi sharing his observations at this year's two sessions meetings. Still in Asia, it's been 13 years since the horrifying nuclear meltdown in Fukushima, Japan. The deadly earthquake and tsunami in 2011 triggered the world's worst nuclear disaster since Chernobyl. This anniversary comes as the fourth round of nuclear contaminated water release is underway. Chris Gilbert reports from Tokyo and says there could be protests near the Prime Minister's office.
Well, at the moment, most people here in Tokyo are at work, and so it's the middle of the day, so there is not much action here at the moment, but it is expected a few hours from now that this will be a much different scene here behind me, the Prime Minister's office. And we do see protests in Tokyo every March 11th. Interestingly, last year, they were outside the TEPCO headquarters. Treated contaminated water discharge into the ocean is ongoing in the fourth batch, but this time last year, it hadn't even started yet. And so protesters were targeting that. This year, interestingly, they're outside the Prime Minister's office later, and that may well be because the government is this year really beginning a U-turn on some policies which were put in place in 2012, the year after the disaster, which looked to completely denuclearize Japan by the 2030s in terms of energy and power. Now we're seeing the reverse. In August and September, two power plants, nuclear power plants, are set to begin booting up operations again. One of them in September in Miyagi Prefecture. Now that is directly on the very same coastline that tsunami hit 13 years ago and wrecked the Fukushima nuclear power plant. It's effectively in the same location, just a few hundred kilometers further north up the coast. But that area was hit by the tsunami. Last year, we saw policies from the government looking to renew damaged nuclear power plants, build new nuclear power plants, extend their lifespan beyond 60 years. And of course, we saw the startup of that discharge from the wrecked nuclear power plant. This is likely what protesters are going to be focusing on as they demonstrate on this location later. And of course, on New Year's Day earlier this year, we had that earthquake and small tsunami in Ishikawa Prefecture. There was a near miss with the nuclear power plant there, the Shika power plant. And so that is likely also going to be on everyone's minds this March 11.
That was Chris Gilbert reporting from Tokyo. Finally, in Africa, Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces have agreed to a temporary ceasefire during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. But a senior Sudanese armed forces general said on Sunday that there will be no truce unless the RSF leave the homes and sites of civilians. The two sides were responding to a call by the United Nations Security Council for an immediate cessation of hostilities. Naba Muhyiddin reports from Port Sudan.
This potential respite from the 11-month-old conflict was in response to Friday's call by the UN Security Council for an immediate ceasefire during Ramadan, which starts on Monday. Sudanese people are hopeful that this temporary ceasefire will help ease the situation, especially in conflict hotspots. In a statement, the RSF said it hopes the Security Council resolution would significantly limit the suffering of the Sudanese people and pave the way for a political process that would lead to an end in the fighting. The Sudanese Foreign Ministry said on Saturday the government appreciated the UN resolution for a ceasefire, but outlined conditions for such a ceasefire with the RSF. And on Sunday, the Assistant Commander of the Sudan Armed Forces, General Yasser Al-Atta, reiterated that position, saying there would be no truce in Sudan during Ramadan unless the rapid support forces leave the homes and sites of civilians. The conflict between the Sudanese armed forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces erupted in April last year in and around the capital Khartoum. The fighting has claimed thousands of lives, uprooted 8 million from their homes, and tipped Sudan into a serious humanitarian crisis. In the resolution, the Security Council expressed mounting concerns over the worsening humanitarian situation, including serious food shortages, particularly in Darfur. There are reports of international humanitarian and human rights law violations, including sexual violence and abuse. In the resolution adopted with 14 votes in favor and one abstention by Russia, the Council also called on all parties in the conflict to seek a sustainable resolution of the conflict through dialogue.
That was Naba Muhyiddin reporting from Port Sudan. Recapping today's headlines. Fighting continues to rage in the Gaza Strip as Muslims around the world are celebrating the holy month of Ramadan. The U.S. military has airlifted its non-essential embassy personnel from Haiti and bolstered embassy security. And Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces have agreed to a temporary ceasefire during Ramadan. And that's it for this edition of The Top Story, a podcast that brings you world headlines every weekday. For more news in politics, business, sports, and culture, you can subscribe to The Beijing Hour, a one-hour podcast news magazine program. We welcome and appreciate all ratings and reviews. I'm Tian Yu. Thank you for listening.